You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Thursday, March 23, 2023. Trading in the USA. Pulling back the curtain on North America's crude oil trading market. Published by Rusty Brazil. Trading in the highly integrated U.S. and Canadian crude oil market is undergoing a profound transformation, driven mostly by the pull of exports off the Gulf Coast. But the shifts in flows, values, and even the trade structures being used today are not well understood outside a small cadre of professional traders and marketers. Consider a few examples. Domestic sweet oil traded at Cushing on NYMEX is not West Texas Intermediate. WTI at Cushing has averaged a hefty $1.80 per barrel over NYMEX for the past year. Most spot Houston and Midland crudes trade as buy-sell swaps. WTI in Houston trades at a discount to Corpus Christi and sweet crudes in Louisiana. Crude in Wyoming trades at a premium to Cushing. And the Gulf Coast is the highest value market for Canadian heavy crude. This is not your father's or mother's oil trading game. Our mission in this blog series is to pull back the curtain on physical crude trading in North America, explain how it works, what sets the price, and who is doing the deals. Crude oil markets in North America are dynamic, independent, and uniquely built around the mechanics of physical pipeline deliveries. At the same time, they can be convoluted, arcane, and quite opaque, even while appearing to be transparent. Increasingly, the price of oil in North America drives global markets. But what determines the price of crude oils in North America? Sure, at the macro level, it's the economics of production on the supply side, refined products on the demand side, crude import-export flows, transportation costs, and crude quality specs. But markets don't trade at the macro level. Individual deals done between buyers and sellers are the real price makers, and it's the workings of those deals that are generally misunderstood by many market participants, even those who buy and sell large volumes of physical barrels. Most physical crude oil barrels in North America move under term contracts with formula prices, which are frequently based in part on indices from price reporters like Argus and Platts. Where do they get their prices? The spot market, of course. Oil trade data is aggregated by price reporters from a variety of market participants and is used to provide a daily market assessment of an array of crude oil grades that trade at various locations across North America. But what about those spot trades? Does trader A call-up trader B and say, buy 30,000 barrels of West Texas Light, or WTL, from you in Midland at $70 a barrel, and then they haggle for a while before settling on a number? Sure, a few deals could still get done that way, and it was the only way to trade a half century ago. But today the vast majority of physical crude oil trading in North America is based on differentials. Those differentials can be calculated and structured in many different ways, but for the most part they are indexed to NYMEX light sweet crude at Cushing. No big surprise, right? But there are many surprises when you examine how the differentials are established, what it takes to execute the trades, and how the physical trades influence crude oil prices around the world. And that is why it is so important to understand how crude oil trading in North America actually works. For one thing, these trades have a big impact on international markets. The U.S. exports 3.6 million barrels per day, but still imports 6.3 million barrels per day, 2022 Energy Information Administration, or EIA. Stats. The reason for the seemingly superfluous exchange of barrels is all about quality and location. Which crude oil qualities are needed at specific refineries in North America versus the crudes needed in the rest of the world. And it is the prices of crudes in North America versus those in the rest of the world that determine which barrels get exported and which are imported. 1. Equally important is the impact of these trades on crude flows across North America. Which pipelines out of the Permian get the barrels? Which refineries have economic access to Canadian heavy crudes? Does it make sense to export WTL or run it on the Gulf Coast? The idiosyncrasies of physical crude trading in North America won't serve up the answers to these questions on a silver platter. But a knowledge of the fundamentals, along with reliable data sources for the trades, will go a long way in explaining why the crude markets behave as they do. And in some cases, the analysis can serve as the canary in the coal mine when markets are, for whatever reason, getting out of balance. So double-check your scuba gear, we'll be going deep. But first, we need to start with the basics. And that means geography. Liquid, actively traded physical spot crude oils are transacted at hubs, key locations where pipelines, storage and crude flows support a critical mass of relatively standard commercial transactions. Of course, the most significant hub is Cushing, Oklahoma, the delivery point for the CME/NYMEX domestic sweet crude oil contract at the intersection of 11 inbound pipelines and 9 outbound pipes, with over 94 million barrels of above-ground storage. You might want to take a look at Figure 1 in today's blog on the website, where we show 8 other major hubs, with the size of the circle generally representative of the level of activity, albeit not directly proportional to trading volume. It's just an indication. Hubs exist for different reasons. Alberta, Edmonton, Rockies, and Midland are primarily production supply hubs. Patoka and hubs along the Gulf Coast are staging areas for refinery and export supply. A given grade of crude oil can trade at more than one hub, and frequently does. For example, WTI actively trades at Midland, Cushing, Houston, and Corpus Christi. Canadian crudes trade in Alberta, Patoka, Cushing, and the Gulf Coast. Bakken crude trades in the Rockies, at Patoka, and on the Gulf Coast. As a general rule, the closer a crude is to the center of U.S. refining and exports, the Gulf Coast, the higher the price of the crude will be. But that's only half the story. The other major determinant of price is crude quality, and the two most important metrics are density, as measured by API gravity, and sulfur content, as measured by percentage. Again, the general rule is the lower the gravity, the lower the price, all other variables being equal. On the sulfur scale, the higher the sulfur, the lower the price. But those are just general rules. To understand how North America crude pricing really works, we need to delve into the details. For our first case study, consider the 2022 average differentials of the various crudes in Figure 2 versus NYMEX Domestic Sweet at Cushing, or NYMEX DS, based on data provided by our friends at Link Data Services. Arguably, the most important differential is Midland WTI, the crude with the most rapid production growth and the incremental supply for most U.S. exports. In 2022, Midland WTI traded $1.27 per barrel over NYMEX DS. It's the best indicator of the true value of WTI at the primary production hub for the crude grade. Note that this production hub price is higher than the price at the Cushing storage and distribution hub, even though up to 400,000 barrels per day moved from the Permian to Cushing on the Basin and Centurion pipelines during 2022. Why would shippers move barrels from a higher value market to a lower value market? Answer, they would not. Which gets us to one of those secrets of physical spot crude oil pricing we promised in the title to this blog. Even though Midland WTI averaged $1.27 per barrel over NYMEX DS, the same WTI delivered on Basin into Cushing averaged $1.74 per barrel above NYMEX DS, or 47 cents per barrel higher than Midland. Why would a buyer pay $1.74 per barrel over NYMEX DS for WTI at Cushing? Answer, because NYMEX DS is not WTI, at least the way the market defines WTI. NYMEX DS is a blended crude that meets the delivery specs of the NYMEX DS futures contract, which can be 37 to 42 degrees API gravity and 0.42% sulfur. In contrast, as defined by the market, WTI's crude produced in the Permian Basin that has similar gravity and sulfur specs to NYMEX DS, but is a neat stream, meaning that it has not been subject to discernible blending with crudes that have significantly different refinery yields than true WTI. What kind of blending are we talking about? Let's consider a typical example. Two crude streams frequently blended in small quantities into NYMEX DS are Western Canadian Select, or WCS, and WTL. WCS is a low-gravity 21.3 API, high sulfur at 3.6%, crude mostly used in sophisticated refineries with the expensive hardware needed to break the crude down into lighter petroleum products. Because of its lower quality, WCS sells at a substantial discount, $19.50 per barrel below NYMEX DS at Edmonton and $10.55 per barrel below after it has been moved down to Cushing. Stir in a little WCS with other light streams and sell the resulting blend as NYMEX DS, and the blender is making just a little less than $10.55 per barrel on each WCS barrel blended. But of course, the blender must take care not to exceed NYMEX DS gravity and sulfur specs. One way to make room for more WCS is to stir in a little WTL with API gravity between 44.1 and 49.9, which was priced in Midland at only 32 cents per barrel above NYMEX DS in 2022. Move this cheaper stream to Cushing to blend with neat WTI and a little highly discounted WCS and voila, you've got NYMEX DS and made a solid blending profit to boot. But, of course, the NYMEX DS is not the same as WTI. it has more lower value naphtha and other light ends from the WTL. And it contains more lower value resid and TAN, total acid number, from the WCS. The resulting crude is sometimes referred to as a dumbbell, larger yield on the two ends of the scale, but less high value distillate, diesel, jet, in the middle. It may be deliverable on the NYMEX DS futures contract, but it does not command the same price as neat WTI. However, the market determines what is a neat barrel. The difference in 2022 was the $1.74 per barrel WTI ex-basin premium noted above. It is that same quality difference that is responsible for most of the premium seen for WTI after it is shipped down to the Gulf Coast to either Houston or Corpus Christi, and the price differential between those two locations. During 2022, the benchmark Houston price at Magellan's Midland East Houston, or MEH, averaged $1.61 per barrel, or a paltry 34 cents per barrel over Midland, reflecting a super discounted location differential between the two hubs, while Corpus traded at $1.75 per barrel, or 14 cents per barrel over MEH, coincidentally almost the same as Midland ex-basin into Cushing. The 14 cents per barrel Corpus price advantage in 2022 was due primarily to the perception that WTI crude delivered to Corpus Christi terminals via the Cactus, Epic crude and Gray Oak pipes is neat WTI. After all, it's a straight shot from the Permian to Corpus area docks, while Houston WTI is more likely to be blended with crudes from other regions since Permian crude is staged in multi-pipeline connected storage before delivery to docks for export. And the Corpus advantage is growing, averaging a much more robust 37 cents per barrel over Houston MEH to date in 2023. The bottom line is that even with the narrow quality range of domestic sweet crude, small variations can be responsible for pronounced price differences. And as we'll see in future episodes of this blog series, it's a much bigger deal with heavy and higher sulfur crudes. In this case study, we've used just a few crudes at four of the major trading hubs with average price differentials from 2022. We've shown that the price of WTI is not what's on your screen for NYMEX DS at Cushing, and we've explored how the value of WTI at different locations last year was mostly about quality, and much less about transportation costs. But this just scratches the surface of what crude oil prices can tell us about market dynamics. The real value to be gleaned from an understanding of crude markets in North America is by assessing the daily price patterns to determine how they influence all market fundamentals, from pipeline flows to export volumes, from the Cushing NYMEX price to netbacks in Canada. That's where we are heading in this series, a deep dive into crude oil pricing in North America and how to use the tea leaves of crude price differentials to understand the changes ahead in crude markets. Prices are only part of the major fundamental indicators that are showing the way ahead in U.S. crude and product markets, especially as they are reshuffled by growing export volumes. Pipeline flows are being rerouted, new terminals are being developed, and exports continue to increase. We should note here that, to make sense of it all, RBN will soon be bringing together the views of top executives engaged in these markets, midstreamers, private equity producers, shipping companies, and other major players, along with RBN's latest analysis on infrastructure, production, and takeaway capacity. We call our conference ExportCon Oil 2023. This is where data and experience come together to explain what you need to know about the next phase of development in U.S. exports. ExportCon Oil 2023 is scheduled for the Houstonian in Houston on June 8, 2023. There, we'll review RBN's latest market analysis on the different energy export markets and then discuss what industry executives are seeing in their businesses. The need for U.S. exports to meet global demand will be front and center, along with what has been happening to supply-demand balances in the U.S. In addition to the whole RBN senior analyst team, we'll be joined by Jim Teague, co-CEO of Enterprise Products, Scott Sheffield, CEO of Pioneer Natural Resources, Aaron Milford, CEO of Magellan Midstream, Brian Freed, CEO of Epic Midstream, Tom Cloza, Global Head of Energy Analysis at Opus, Tony Chivanek, Senior Vice President of Fundamentals and Supply Appraisal at Enterprise, and Sean Strawbridge, CEO of Port of Corpus Christi. All of these leaders have made significant contributions to U.S. export markets. Other folks participating in our conference will be announced over the next few days. Sign up now while the rate is cheap. Living in the USA was written by Steve Miller and appears as the fourth song on side one of the Steve Miller Band's second studio album, Sailor. Released as a single in September 1968, it went to number 49 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. The song showcases Miller's vocals and harp playing, which sometimes conjures up the ghost of Little Walter. Miller says he was inspired to write the lyrics to the tune by the trouble that led up to the riots at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 1968. For all you trivia freaks and gearheads, the cars you hear at the beginning and end of the song were twin small-block Chevy-powered rail jobs owned by Howard Kamms and Lefty Muttersbach, recorded at Lions Drag Strip in Long Beach, California. Muttersbach won the race, now, somebody gimme a cheeseburger. Personnel on the record were Steve Miller, lead vocal, harp, guitar, Boss Skaggs, guitar, backing vocals, Lonnie Turner, bass, backing vocals, Jim Peterman, keyboards, backing vocals, and Tim Davis, drums, backing vocals. Sailor was recorded in August and September 1968 in Los Angeles, with Glyn Johns producing. Released in October 1968, the album went to number 24 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart. It was the last album to feature contributions from original Steve Miller Band members Boss Skaggs and Jim Peterman. One single was released from the LP. Steve Miller is an American musician and songwriter. He is the founder and only original member of the Steve Miller Band, which he founded in 1966. Miller started his professional career in the blues and moved toward a more pop-oriented sound during the mid-1970s. Les Paul, who was a close friend of Miller's parents, is his godfather. After playing blues in Chicago, Miller, drawn by the growing music scene in San Francisco, relocated there in 1966 and formed the Steve Miller Band. He has released 18 studio albums, 6 live albums, 11 compilation albums, and 30 singles. 30 members have passed through the Steve Miller Band since its inception. Miller continues to tour.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.